night I had a dream that the world had turned around. All our hopes had come to be, and people gathered around. They offered all they could bring, and no battle went with that. I learned a song to sing. The revolution starts now.
Good afternoon, Richmond. Welcome to Indie Media Live, one of the most progressive half hours on the radio, because we have no corporate sponsorship and no corporate control. I hope you'll stay tuned to hear what a difference that makes in bringing you the news. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. I'm going to jump right in with the director of the Patricia M. Arnold Women's Rights Project with the ACLU. Kathy Greenier is here. Kathy, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for running in, and I know you have to run right out, but I hope that you will give our listeners an update on the legislative attacks on women's reproductive rights in the Commonwealth and how they might let their voices be heard.
Surely. So the Senate floor today should be hearing and voting on the House version of the mandatory ultrasound bill that has been the focus of much national attention and local debate here in the Commonwealth. I think everyone is probably familiar now with the egregious nature of that bill, mandating that every woman before undergoing an abortion procedure must receive an ultrasound, which is an intrusion into the doctor-patient relationship. The patient and her doctor are the best decision makers as to what procedures are necessary for that woman. And this bill is not about women's health care. It is only about the politicization of the issue and about restricting access to reproductive rights.
Do you have the number on that bill?
House Bill 462. The Senate version of that bill was struck by the Senate patron, which we were all encouraged to see. But I think that folks here in Virginia and certainly across the country have not waned in their effort to oppose this House version now.
So how would our listeners get involved if they had a mind to?
Well, hopefully we will see the bill be voted down today on the Senate floor. Should it not be, then folks can contact the governor as one option to voice their feelings about the bill. And then also there has been a very organic grassroots vocal opposition to the variety of bills restricting women's reproductive rights. And that group, Speak Loud with Silence is their name, will be holding a rally at the governor's mansion this Saturday at 12 noon.
Thank you so much. And if people are interested in getting in touch with the governor's office, 786-2211 right here in Richmond. Thank you, Kathy. Anything else that you need our listeners to know?
Well, we had a great victory for women this morning when the Senate Finance Committee passed by indefinitely House Bill 62, which would have repealed current coverage that is available for low-income women to terminate their pregnancies in cases of gross and totally incapacitating fetal anomalies. The introduction of that bill was a very cruel manifestation of the restrictions on reproductive rights, and we were delighted to see that it was voted down in the Finance Committee today.
And when you say indefinitely, I know some bills are carried over till next year. Is there a difference?
There is. We saw some bills this session that were unfortunately carried over until 2013. Such was the case for the much debated personhood bill, but that was not the case with House Bill 62, and that was passed by indefinitely.
Well, thank you so much. The director of the Patricia M. Arnold Women's Rights Project with the ACLU, Kathy Greenier. Thank you, Kathy, for being here. And the rally is on Saturday at noon?
That is correct.
At Court Square?
At the Governor's Mansion.
At the Governor's Mansion.
Folks can find information about the group Speak Loud with Silence on their Facebook page.
Wonderful. Kathy, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm going to turn now to my other guests, and we're still talking about the General Assembly and where things are right at the moment. There's so much that's important that's going on. Stuart Schwartz is here. He is the Executive Director of the Coalition for Smarter Growth, and he's also a board member of the Virginia Conservation Network. I have the Virginia Conservation Network's Executive Director here with us. Nathan Lott is back in the house. And Glenn Bessa, the director of the Sierra Club Virginia, is here. And you guys aren't going to believe the conversation that we're going to have and all the information that's going to be coming your way. If you've just tuned in, it is 23 minutes before the hour. This is Indy Media Live on WRIR. Let's jump right in with Stuart Schwartz, the Executive Director of the Coalition for Smarter Growth. Stuart, could you tell us just a little bit about your organization?
Certainly. First of all, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
And the rest of the team here. The Coalition for Smarter Growth goes back to 1997, was originally a group of conservation organizations, but now we work with business groups, transit advocates, and others throughout the Washington, D.C. region. So a heavy emphasis on Northern Virginia. But these issues of land use and transportation and where and how we grow are so significant that there's also a group now here in Richmond, the Partnership for Smarter Growth, that I'm on the board of that organization, and we have partner groups in other parts of Virginia as well.
And that is all part of the whole environmental picture, which puts you guys along with the Virginia Conservation Network.
Absolutely, but we're also showing that this is about good development, well-designed development, walkable communities, transit-oriented communities, the revitalization of our cities. So the issue of smart growth really touches on everything that we deal with in Virginia, so many of the different issues of housing, transportation, land use, and the environment. So it is a very bipartisan issue, and it actually has many fiscal conservative components to it, because if we grow more efficiently in the places where we already have infrastructure, we're saving Virginia taxpayers money.
And that's a very important issue for us right now. Nathan, the Executive Director of Virginia Conservation Network, you and your organization have been following some important bills dealing with the budget as we've been going through the General Assembly. We had Evan Fineman on a couple of weeks ago talking about the budget issues. And can you bring us up to date on anything that's going on with the budget?
Sure thing, Rebecca. It's great to be back with you.
Thank you.
So while there have been all these very controversial social issues grabbing the headlines that we just heard about, there's been a lot of backroom wheeling and dealing regarding the taxpayers' money and how it's going to be spent and who's going to benefit. And I was glad to hear Stuart mentioning the fiscal benefits and the financial stewardship that goes along with promoting transit and smarter, better land use rather than trying to build roads ad nauseum at a very high cost to taxpayers. So the transportation debate is very much rolled up in the budget debate. But essentially, the General Assembly has boxed themselves into a corner by giving away lots of money in the form of tax breaks. And I'm sure Evan spoke very eloquently about this when he was with you last week.
In the loopholes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one of the examples that is perhaps most significant to environmental advocates is the $30 million a year in tax credits given for the extraction of coal, for coal production.
What?
So $30 million of taxpayer money a year given via tax credits to coal companies. And they actually, coal companies don't have $30 million of total tax burden to the state, so they then sell those to utilities to redeem. And obviously coal is a mature industry. We've been mining coal in Virginia for generations. This is not really an incentive that's needed to help the industry get a toehold in the state.
Is that on the table to maybe do away with those?
Well, it should have been. And unfortunately, what they did instead was extend them by two more years. This came just on the heels of the JLARC study, Joint Legislative Audit Review Committee, this bicameral research arm of the General Assembly, they did a report and they denounced these coal tax credits, saying not only have they not created jobs, we've actually seen jobs hemorrhaged from Southwest Virginia in the 15 years that we've had these tax credits. all but saying it's time to let these sunset and go away. And instead, the legislature reauthorized them for 2 more years, out to 2017. Now, you can go to vpap.org and find the $1.5 million in coal executive and coal corporation donations to members of the General Assembly, which may help put that in context. But what that means in terms of the budget is that because of giveaways like that, there's just a smaller pot of money to go into the core functions of government. So things like supporting rails and public transit, keeping our buses running, keeping our roads pothole free, and things that we as environmental conservationists care about, things like cleaning the James River that flows through Richmond, where we know that there's actually sewage running through the storm system into the river. We need money to fix it. The city has a plan to fix it, and they're going hat in hand to the General Assembly asking for bond money to do that work. The short story of the budget is that there's not enough money to go around. There's not enough for our teachers, for our firemen, and for our elderly in terms of health care, and it's because we've given it out a total of something like $570 million this year in tax credits and giveaways. And
Stuart Frost.
And there's a good transition here to the governor's transportation bill, because what's two of the most significant provisions of it are the ones that would siphon off part of the state general sales tax and shift that money into transportation, as well as taking government general fund surpluses and also moving that to transportation. In both cases, you're reducing the money available for education, public safety, health care, and the other needs of the community in Virginia. And, you know, I like to point out that, we pay gas taxes, we pay tolls, there are user fees, we pay transit fares that help support our transportation system. But we don't want to be able to have to charge people for their children to go to school, an individual fee, or for you to have police and fire service. So those are usually funded with general funds, local and state general funds. And that's the way it should be. That's the way it seems to work best. And so that's why we don't support this raid on the general fund as part of the governor's transportation package.
Thank you so much, Stuart Schwartz, the executive director of the Coalition for Smarter Growth. My jaw is dropping here. I'm wondering if citizens have an opportunity to weigh in on the budget at this point.
Well, as your listeners probably know, the Senate declined to pass a budget. So there's the only vehicle right now is this House budget. There will eventually probably be a conference committee and some wheeling and dealing. And hopefully we will have a budget by June when our local governments need to pass their own budgets and they need to know how much money they're going to get from the state to operate schools or to patch potholes, et cetera. So it's a difficult process. It's always a pretty opaque process, and it's all the more so this year given the wheeling and dealing. But there are a few points that I think can be made to legislators, and there are a few financial items that are actually still in the committee process. So one of them that I think is probably really of interest to your listeners, given the James River and its place in Richmond, is a bill that's SB 494. It's actually carried by Senator Watkins, who represents part of South Richmond in Chesterfield County. And this bill would authorize more than $300 million in bonding for local governments to improve their wastewater treatment plants and for the city of Richmond to actually address the combined sewer overflows that cause raw sewage to go into the James River, just downstream of the city. And this bill passed the Senate. It now needs to pass the House Appropriations Committee. And some of the legislators from this Richmond region who are on that committee, Delegate Massey, Delegate Kirk Cox, Delegate Lee Ware from out in Powhatan, Delegate Chris Peace for up in Hanover. So if listeners, have members that represent them that are on the House Appropriations Committee, they should certainly feel that it's appropriate to contact those lawmakers and express their support for this measure if they feel inclined, or for whatever is near and dear to their heart.
And on the transportation side, with the governor's transportation bill, SB 639, the Senate version, had been significantly amended in a bipartisan way. And it stripped out many of the most damaging parts of the governor's transportation bill. It did add indexing of the gas tax, but it would be very incremental over time. It would be tied to the cost of construction of highway projects. And so we'd probably never feel it amidst the bigger global oil market, and that may help us. The other piece on the House side, HB 1248, was passed, and that still has most of the governor's provisions intact. So we're not very happy with that particular bill and think SB 639, the Senate version, is better. Another component of it that people should be concerned about is there are some provisions that make VDOT a super agency, where VDOT can essentially deny a local land use plan or project that the local government and the local community wants to support. They in effect don't want to support the redevelopment as a transit-oriented community in Tyson's Corner, and that's why they don't want to do. They want to be able to veto local land development decisions. They also want to be able to force local communities to accept a road project on their maps, even if the local community is opposed to it and has significant concerns about that particular project. So there's a tendency here to make VDOT a super agency, that we've also seen a general pattern of centralizing power in the Secretary of Transportation and the Commonwealth Transportation Board at the expense of local officials.
And residing in Albemarle County, I certainly feel that.
Yes, with the Charlottesville-Albemarle bypass.
Wow. $400 million plus. I'd like some of that to go to the preservation of the James River.
And that's the other story about transportation. Since the governor was given $3 billion in borrowed money last year, a lot of that we think is being squandered. It's being spent in the wrong places. It's misallocated. So Charlottesville bypass could cost $400 million. But the other big one is this Route 460. And anyone who's driven down to the Hampton Roads area on 460 knows there's no traffic on that road. That's why people take it. It can have safety improvements, but that would cost a lot less than the $1.5 to $1.8 billion it will cost for a brand new interstate. And that is going to take as much as $1.25 billion in subsidies. And so we think so much of the borrowed money that was given to the governor and the Secretary of Transportation is being wasted. It's not being used in a fiscally conservative manner, and that we need to first take care of fixing our existing infrastructure, take care of the traffic bottlenecks in existing communities. But that's not what's happening right now. So we certainly don't want to give more general fund dollars into this transportation pot right now.
If you've just tuned in, it's 12 minutes before the hour. This is Indy Media Live on WRIR. I'm Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with some of the executive directors of the great groups that are involved in the legislative process, speaking for the people. Glenn Bessa is a regular on Indy Media Live. He's the executive director of the Sierra Club of Virginia. Glenn, thank you for being here today.
My pleasure, Rebecca.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking now about energy. What's going on through the legislature and some of the energy bills?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this as I was sitting here. It occurred to me there's two driving factors with regard to energy legislation in the General Assembly. Oh, one is ideology, and the other one is greed. To give you an example of the ideology, there's a resolution out there, House Joint Resolution 50, which is intended to address the issue of sea level rise in Hampton Roads. Hampton Roads is actually the second most vulnerable area of the country, second only to New Orleans in terms of potential damage from flooding and sea level rise and hurricanes. A bill was put in actually by a Republican, Stolle, to study the consequences and how we might address the concerns with regard to sea level rise. But recognizing that to acknowledge sea level rise is to acknowledge global warming, they decided they had to strip out the language reference to sea level rise. And so at two places in this bill, they strip out the language referencing sea level rise, and they put in prevent recurrent flooding. Now, we still think that's a good bill because it's going to provide hopefully some money to get that work done. But as a practical matter, it just shows you that you've got a legislature full of climate deniers, many of them anyway. And as a practical matter, they're not going to really do much in the way of reform. On the side of greed, I have to point out Dominion Virginia Power. I don't know whether they donate to your station or not, but I can tell you this.
No, they don't.
I didn't think so. But bottom line is, last year we discovered that they had, in an effort to comply with the renewable energy standards in Virginia, which are very weak standards, they had bought a bunch of old renewable energy certificates from hydro plants and things like that. As a result of that, they spent about $2 million on acquiring what they needed to demonstrate that they hadn't met the renewable energy standards. In return for meeting those renewable energy standards, the State Corporation Commission, under the state law, granted them $76 million in ratepayer increases. So we're all going to be paying for renewable energy that we didn't get. And we're pretty concerned about that. So we went into the legislature with legislation. This is the greed part. You know, we went into the legislature with legislation that would reform the RPS so that we would see a requirement that new projects be built, not old projects, be recycled. That in addition to that, that they be in Virginia, because you don't create jobs if you're building wind farms in Pennsylvania. And also that they require investments in wind and solar. Well, I have to tell you that that bill died. But there were bills introduced by the governor that weakened the renewable energy standard further. Didn't put one or will not put one electron on the grid, but those bills are actually flying through the legislature. One bill would allow credits, these renewable energy credits, for investments in research and development. Now, research and development is just great, but we don't need a lot of research and development right now with regard to wind and solar. There's a lot of energy, a lot of technology out there. To the extent that there is research, it's not going to be done by companies like Dominion. And as a practical matter, what that does is it means they get rewarded for something other than putting clean energy on the grid, and we don't see any wind or solar. The other bill didn't relate to research and development, but related to what did it relate to? I'm sorry.
Caught him on the spot.
I couldn't think of it. Anyway, there's another bill, and I apologize here because there's so many bills.
I know, you're fine.
Thousands of bills a session.
Further weakened the green energy. Oh, I know what it did. Allowed waste heat. Okay, so if you got a manufacturer, in this case, Mead West Vaco, it's called the Mead West Vaco bill. Okay, I mean that's what they call it. Okay, it doesn't mention Mead West Vaco in the bill, but that's who the bill is to support. So this bill would allow them to count waste heat, use a mathematical formula to calculate how much heat would be equivalent to electricity generated, and then get credits for that. Again, no electricity on the grid, but as a practical matter, they're going to, so we see basically Dominion getting more money for doing very little in the way of renewable energy. So that's really the problem. Let me mention something else. Was mentioned earlier that the coal industry right now gets these tax credits. That's not the only thing they want. They actually want to take property away from individuals. So you have to ask yourself, what happens after you mine the coal out of the ground? Okay, who owns the hole in the ground? Well, I think right now the perception is that the property owner that granted the coal to be mined still retains that right. Well, there's legislation that would allow the coal company to retain the hole in the ground and then use it to dump toxic waste in, basically the waste from mining, which is pretty toxic. Wastewater, waste products in terms of overburden, things like that, just dump it in the mine. They can't do that now because they don't own that mine void. So there's a bill in, it's House Bill 710. It'll be before the Senate Agricultural Committee this Thursday. Anybody who cares about this should be letting senators know that this is a bad idea. Locally, we have two senators that probably represent many of your listeners. Senator McEachin, who is going to be offering an amendment to fix this bill, and Senator Watkins, whose support we need. The way we fix this bill, because we're not going to be able to kill it, is to simply say, okay, if you want to own the hole in the ground, that's fine, but you're not going to be able to dump waste in the ground. Okay, Senator McEachin is going to offer this amendment. We really need a lot of support from Senator McEachin, and then we need a lot of support from Senator Watkins to support this bill. So if your listeners can contact these senators and let them know what they think. We think that they should be supporting this amendment that would fix House Bill 710.
If you've just tuned in, this is Indie Media Live on WRIR. I am Rebecca Ferris, and I'm talking with Nathan Lott of the Virginia Conservation Network, Glenn Bessa of the Sierra Club, and Stuart Schwartz of the Coalition for Smarter Growth. Guys, we just have a couple of minutes. What should we tell our listeners in these last few seconds?
Well, Rebecca, as I listen to this conversation, I think there's a thread going through it. So whether it's taking money from the general fund and spending it on roads and giving it to private road builders, or whether it's being comfortable giving ratepayers money to large utilities, $76 million in rewards for having spent $1.5 million on paper certificates, or whether it's the current budget process, there's a level of comfort with those in the General Assembly in reallocating wealth. And they want to reallocate the wealth away from the middle-class Virginians who pay income tax. That's where the general fund comes from. And they want to reallocate it away from homeowners and small businesses that pay utility rates and reallocate it to large corporations that have a high degree of access. And it's shameful, and it's exactly the opposite of what they ran on, many of them. They ran on, we do not need a government reallocating wealth. But their level of comfort with the reallocation of the people's money to large corporations that have a high degree of access is just shameful. And people need to pay attention to that. And I think they need to call these legislators to account when the session is over, so that when they come back next year and they have a second bite at the apple, maybe they can fix some of the problems that they've created for themselves.
And I would emphasize public participation and involvement. We're giving you a couple things you can do to focus on these particular bills. On the transportation side, the Senate Bill 639 is the better bill, and HB 1248 on the House side is the bill that really gives VDOT too much power and takes money from the general fund. And I would say we should all watchdog where VDOT is spending its money, where our government is spending its money, and raise questions about Route 460 and the Charlottesville bypass, and really ask that we fix our existing roads and transit systems first, that we invest in our cities and existing suburban communities first, before trying to plow under more farmland for highways that are not needed. We have limited funds. We have to use them wisely. And I think there's a clear nexus between good planning and protection of the environment and saving taxpayers money with a better transportation program.
Stuart, if our listeners wanted to get involved in your organization, do you have a website?
Well, here in the Richmond area, that's the Partnership for Smarter Growth. Executive Director is Jan Hatcher, and I think it's psdrichmond.org. My organization, which reaches a pretty broad area out of the Washington, D.C. region, is smartergrowth.net.
And vcnva.org. I'm sure our Correct. Listeners have that email, I mean that website memorized. And Glenn?
SierraClub.org.
SierraClub.org. I thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for all the work that you are doing down in the General Assembly. You guys are great warriors, and I appreciate the struggle so much. If you're looking for something that you can do that's so helpful to the environment, three times a day and snacks in between, you can look no further than your fork, because getting a diet that is more focused on plant-based and away from meat will do so much to help the environment. On behalf of Jesse in the booth and LaShante Goffigan and all the other wonderful volunteers at WRIR who make Indy Media Live possible, we really appreciate all of you tuning in and listening today. Until next week, when my guest will be Iman Shabazz, citizen activist, poet, and spoken word artist, I hope that you will all be kind to yourselves, kind to each other, to the animals, and to the planet. But don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. We wish you peace.